Okay, Mike, the tape is rolling.
Okay, well, very good. Thank you. Yeah, it's 6 o'clock here on Thursday night, January 20th. I'm going to call the Administrative Control Board meeting for January to order. Do we have any public input tonight? Doesn't sound like it. Okay, so that's item one. But I don't think I have to read the determination about meetings without an anchor location. Why?
That's correct, Mike. I confirmed that with Dave, so you can just proceed.
We're going to go to item two, which I think we've executive session. We've moved that to like 8 or 9 or something.
It's moved clear down to 11, Mike. So the updated agenda number 2 is going to be our consent agenda.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've got this copy. All right. So item 2, the consent agenda. Were there any comments to the minutes? Doesn't sound like it.
I had one minor one.
Okay.
Sorry, this is self-centered, but my name's spelled wrong in section 3, sub-bullet C, second reference. My name is missing an H.
We will get that corrected.
Thank you, sir.
Good catch, Ian.
Hey, I read it.
Okay, so then the next one is the check register, and let's just go around the room, so to speak. Tim, did you have any check register comments?
Yeah, I do. There's two that are together on page 2. One that involved $1,000 of wire and $600 of electric supplies. And I just had a question: that do we do a lot of our own electrician work, or was this supplied to an electrician to fix something? You may not know. I just want to have that.
It looks like the first one is to Electropower Utah.
612.
For 612, that would have been work that they did themselves. Their electrician we hire often, or supplies. What was the other one, Tim?
There was one. It was 25816. It was just called wire for $1,000. That just sounds like a lot of wire.
Actually,
my question is this: is that do we have people on staff that do electrician work, or are we just providing supplies to someone that was doing it?
No, that is indeed wire that's used in the house. This is Chris, by the way. That we use in house for wiring. It could have been some of the wiring invoices for cabling we used inside the community water project. It could have also been Silver Springs Well 3 or Cove Canyon Well 3, where we rewired a bunch of stuff in that building as well. And wire is not cheap right now, unfortunately.
So do we have people that are like qualified electricians to go in and do this type of wiring?
Yeah, we're capable of doing the pulling. Any of the heavy duty connection stuff, we do have an electrician that terminates that stuff for us.
Okay.
But the wiring and pulling, we're capable and able to do.
Well, let's move on. I have one other one here. There was one to Thorcon Shotcrete and Shoring, and it was a refund for a hydrant. Were they hooked up to a hydrant that we had to do some of their shotcreting operations, and they had to give a deposit on it or something, and they were just getting refunded?
Yeah, anytime they come in and get a meter, if it's a 3-inch meter, they put a $1,500 deposit down, and then we'll take any usage charges or things like that out of it before we refund.
Okay, so they were just asking to use a hydrant
Exactly.
It was our hydrogen. You asked him to put a deposit, and you were just refunding it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's it. There was a drug testing thing on there. Was it routine?
I think it was just Department of Transportation, if I remember correctly. Did it say? I think they said DOT at the beginning. So, yeah, those are just the random tests we have to do.
Okay. That's it.
Are we finding the expenses for electricians are going up in general? I know it's only the first month of January, but by the same token, I'm still asking the question.
Yeah, I was going to say yes. In general, all contractor costs have gone up, over the last year, and I would expect to see them still going up this year as well.
Great. Thank you.
Well, Tim, I'm sorry, Joel. Did you have any other questions on the check register?
No, that was the main question. I have other questions, but they can wait.
Yeah. Hey, I guess I need to back up just a skosh. Looks like we've got a big agenda tonight. I know there's some stuff, and so I don't mean to be short, but I am going to try and keep us moving. And right, if it's a simple answer, we can keep moving.
Yeah, that sounds great, Mike.
Try to. Okay, so let's see. Karen, any check register comments? Usually I have some good ones.
Oh, we can't hear you, Karen.
All I can see is the agenda.
I can see Karen talking, but I can't hear.
Okay.
Karen, we're still having trouble hearing you, Karen, even though you don't look like you're muted.
I had this happen on one meeting, and I wound up logging out and logging back in. I couldn't resolve it. It showed that I wasn't muted, but no one could hear me.
Why don't you try that, Karen, to log out? Yeah, okay. That doesn't work. Okay, so who else do we have as far as?
I think just you, Mike. If you had any comments on the check register. Mm-hmm.
And Ian.
Sorry, Ian. I was thinking back to your minutes comment. Mike, can we turn it over to Ian for comment?
Yeah, I just did.
Perfect. Go ahead, Karen. We can hear you now.
Okay. So I had four check questions. First one was JCS Mechanical for sound booths for the pump station.
Yeah, that's for the Old Ranch Road pump station, Karen. We have louvers that open in the summer for airflow to keep that building as cool as possible and the pumps are running. Those pumps are extremely loud, and the property immediately adjacent to there was just subdivided, and there's going to be single-family homes being built. So we're trying to get out ahead of a potential noise complaint. We put a sound baffle on those louvers.
Okay, that makes sense. We had two preferred paving charges, one for $19.75 and one for $9.65, but it didn't appear. The two preferred paving, Steve's?
Yeah, they're usually just patchwork as we have leaks and other repairs that distribution needs after they've been out fixing a leak or something like that.
Okay, and then we had $20,000 for a Painted Valley Water Service.
Painted Valley Water Service.
Oh, those are the three service laterals in Promontory. There were three laterals that were not placed when the water system was originally put in. So those are individual residence services.
And we have to pay for that, not Promontory?
Good question. No, Promontory is responsible to pay for it, but we had a mishap with in the field with tapping of an incorrect main. As you're aware, Karen, there's a lot going on in Promontory with irrigation water and culinary water, and so we made a mistake that led to Promontory having to incur some expenses. So we shared in the pain on that.
Gotcha. Okay, and then the last one, it looks like, do we typically refund a meter fee, an impact fee, when somebody pays it?
We typically don't. That one's a Tim and Lisa case. They have to go through quite a few hoops to get it refunded. They have to get approval from the county. The county has to pull their building permit. And once we get all that documentation from them, then we will refund. But it's not as easy as a call up and, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. They have to go through quite a bit to get it refunded, but they did complete all those requirements.
Okay. And that was it on the check register.
Okay.
Thank you. Ian?
Thank you.
First one, are we complete with this last payment to Jacobs Engineering for $39,000? Are we done with that Signal Hill? We all paid up?
We're caught up, but we're going to be spending about $300,000 with them this year as they start the study on the treatment plant expansion. That was kind of a first invoice, well, maybe second invoice for the expansion. There have been some earlier invoices in the year about just optimization. Now we're moving into the expansion phase.
Okay. Yeah, I thought there was some comment that we were done with one phase of their work. That must have been just... Okay, that first phase is done, and now this is the expansion phase. Got it. Lost River Works, labeled as consulting for $2,000-something dollars. What's that?
That is Doug Evans. The consulting that he does, that's the name of his company.
He needs to charge more. And I saw we had a bunch more stuff from Whitney Advertising.
Yeah, that was kind of the swag for Christmas gifts and also kind of to stock up for, you know, trade shows or giveaways to new employees and things like that. So that was, I think that's the last of the Whitney Advertising, at least for this year.
Okay, because there was four last month and then another three this month. So just multiple orders all on top of each other. They couldn't do it in one order.
Yeah, there was a lot of partial shipments and... as you may have, there was a kind of a variety of different items, whether they were tech items or, you know, the hammocks or things like that. So she would kind of bring them in and invoices as she got them, I think, to help her cash flow.
All right. And then last comment on the check register, just a thanks to everybody that helped plan the holiday lunch. I saw that in there. So that's really important, acknowledging employees. So thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks you guys for the careful look at that. I think that's really important. We've got two purchase orders here tonight. We have Hydra Specialties and a Ford product. It looks like the... hang on. Okay, here it is. So, it's more meters. $100,000 worth of meters. It looks like that this is just because it's over that threshold that...
Yeah, it's over the $50,000 threshold. We wanted to get a good... inventory on hand to start the year now that it's in budget again. We, as you all know, we had so many people come in and pay deposits and pay their meter fee last year. So as those start to get installed this year, we needed to get those on hand. We're not sure exactly about their lead times. We wanted to get this in early and let them start to ship against it if they need to, you know, need to. There were quite a few inch and a half meters, I think 100 on there, to be exact, and that's only about half of what we sold last year, less than half. So we'll have some more POs probably later in the year, but this gets our inventory back up to kind of a safe level, so we won't be surprised by a bunch of installs coming in all in at once or something, in a month or something.
Okay. That's, so is do we have this in the budget? Was this
yeah.
expected? So it's this, I can, so I think we need a motion for the approval of this, right?
You can do it as part of that consent agenda approval, Mike. So if you want to do a quick overview on the next PO.
That's good. And then this next one is for a...
I think it's three trucks, right?
It's actually five trucks. We got a little behind because of doing the ditch witch and a couple other things. So, but we had budgeted $200,000 for trucks in 2022 in the budget. So we can get rid of some of the older ones that are getting a little more expensive with repairs and high on mileage. We're hoping, you know, they're still real on when they'll actually be shipped to us and received. We're hopeful for the summer still, but we kind of needed to get this in line and get them building them and hopefully so we can get them. But, yeah, there's one larger truck, the F-350. That once it gets here, we'll actually put the bed on it with the toolboxes. So it kind of comes as just the cab and the chassis. And then the other four are kind of more our typical work trucks.
Steve, I had a question on those. They're all being purchased down there in Draper, and it looks like they're getting a pretty healthy state government discount on each one of them.
Yeah.
With that discount, I mean, is that a discount that we might get locally in Summit County out of, like, the Ford dealer here? Or is that something that's only being offered, or is it a – did you do some shopping around on it?
I'll have to double-check with Casey. He does – it's the same price where no matter we order them under the state contract, basically the dealer has to sell them to us at that if they want to take them. We've just used – Larry H. Miller before, but we could definitely talk to a more local dealer, and as long as they can order them and get them in, it should be the same price.
Well, on a purchase like this, I mean, maybe I'm ignorant on the taxes or something, but wouldn't that turn around? And is there any taxes that you incur on this at the county level?
No, because no sales tax since we're
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So...
get the best deal then.
Yeah. And that they've been good to work with, and they're a big dealer, so they tend to, I think, get a little more response from Ford. So I think that's why Casey goes to them. But
Brian, do you have any other information? I feel like we've purchased from local dealers in Park City before.
So I think the problem with going through local dealers is they are not on the state contract. And that changes our procurement world. Larry H. Miller just happens to have the state contract for Ford, and so that's why we go through those guys, is because of the state contract. It just gets kind of muddy when we, you know, Crandall's now Carl Malone. They can probably match it, but it just goes against our procurement policy.
Okay, thanks, Brian.
If there's any other questions on the consent agenda? Okay, hearing none, I'm ready for a motion.
Motion to approve the consent agenda as presented. And
Ian and Joel had a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, that was unanimous. Thanks, you guys. So then, item three, Mr. Steve Anderson, financial management updates.
Yeah. What the heck?
There you go, Steve. It's up.
Okay, you can see my screen now. Okay, so we've done our preliminary close for the year, and we did end up $4.34 million better than projected on the net income. As you're all aware, it was due to the development-related collections that were $3.69 million ahead of budget. At the very end, retail water sales did get just back above the original budget, so that was interesting. We'd made an amendment just in case we didn't, but we did get back above that. If you'd been following this really closely, maybe Karen or those, we have, in talking with the auditors, we want to adjust the timing on recognizing our meter revenue and our meter expense, because it hadn't been a big issue, but with this higher growth and needing getting all the money from the meters but not having had to buy them in 2021, there was a mismatch on the timing of that. So we've made a journal entry in December to defer some of that revenue to 2022 so it'll better match the expenses, which you saw in the PO earlier. But all well absorbed in the high revenue year. We also ended up below on expenses, a little over $500,000 on operations and maintenance, another $65,000 on kind of admin costs. So overall, we were $664,000 below on operating expenses and another $11,000 below on non-operating expenses. So so kind of a combination of really high revenue and also being under expenses by about 6.3%. Resulted in the positive, in the high revenue, high net income for the year, excuse me. Cash, as we've been telling you, we would go through a lot of money in December. And as you can see, we did. Our cash balance dropped by about $4.3 million. In the check register, you saw the big payment to Weaver Basin and the $1.82 million for the water lease fees for 2022. And then the other big drop was the debt reserves held by trustee. That's where all the bond payments. So we put a little bit aside every month, send it to Zions to make the bond payments at the end of the year. And then they take it out of that, those funds to make all the bond payments. So,
that's why it's not on the check register.
That's why it's not on the check register.
Okay. Right.
And yeah, so every month we put 1/12 of it. So it kind of builds and builds and builds through the year, but then it all gets basically taken out in December.
Which one is, where is that one, Steve?
So it's kind of that section, second section that says debt reserves held by trustee. So our trustee is Zions Bank. So at the end of November, we had over $3 million basically on deposit with them. Now we only have a little over $500,000 because they take that money and make all our bond payments for us.
Thank you.
Let's see. And then customer growth, we ended at 434 new connections, slightly above our four-year average of 137. So this is new territory we're wandering into in 2022, having all these people becoming connected. Promontory, I'm sure everybody up there is quite happy with the 121 lot sales. I've already noticed in January we've had quite a few again in January, so that's pretty amazing. So just as a little note, right now we have roughly $900,000 on deposit from customers. So when they come in, they put $1,500 down as a deposit to become a water user later. So that's 600 customers. Even if some of those are kind of old or things like that, there's, you know, between 500 and 600 customers who have already paid their deposit and will want to become water using customers here in the near future. So, so that's where we've got a big year ahead of us. And then water usage, probably draw your attention to kind of the lower section of this box. We finished the MRW customers ended at 2,026 acre feet. Compared to last year, it was 2,346 acre feet. So we were down on usage compared to last year and pretty close to the four-year average, but just, you know, last year and this year is kind of the better view of what to look at there. But no real surprises there. Park City was a little lower than we thought they would, but we'll be talking to them, and they've given us estimates for this new year. Then our graph in December with all the base, you'll see that the purple line did get back up above previous years. And that's pretty much attributable to base, just the growth we've had, not higher usage or anything like that. In the paragraph, I did just make the one comment that we ended at $9.14 million in water sales for 2021. In 2020, which you remember was really a hot year and no restrictions on watering, we were at $9.62 million. And then there was this kind of December's view. The wholesale water was well above budget because we were paid by Pine Meadows for their water usage for the year. So that all that payment and the revenue was recorded in December. Other than that, everything was pretty close to budget. So that's kind of the quick view for the end of 2021. Here in a couple of months, you'll get the real detailed as we complete the audit and have Dana come and present. And I am going to ask her to talk a little bit about internal controls and things like that as part of her presentation, because I think that was a topic that came up a couple of board meetings ago, that just kind of you guys all understand how they see them and how we do the best we can, even though we're not the biggest organization. So any questions?
Yeah, on Pine Meadows, what was their total bill for the year? Do you know?
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have looked that up. It was just under $30,000.
About, that's close enough, $30,000.
Yeah.
Do we know how many acre feet that was?
It was 6 acre feet from us, because they pay the kind of out of district $13.39 per 1,000 gallons plus the high elevation charge for that water.
So that 6 acre feet cost $30,000.
Yeah.
Based on those rates.
Correct.
Okay. That might come up later. So thank you.
All right. You bet.
And were there any other questions? Okay.
Great work, Steve.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thank you. It looks like there's a thing from Zions Bank in here, though.
Yeah.
A signature card.
Yeah, we've got all the accounts set up as Zions. As you recall, we were working on getting that moved over. And on the signature card, you'll see, you know, Scott, my, Lisa, and Chris's names, all as signers. But a board member has to sign the little area that's written board member. So, Mike, I'll need to get that to you if you wouldn't mind, so you can sign that. Then we'll all sign that, those of us in the office, and get that over to Zions, and we'll get our banking and credit cards and everything moved over to them.
Okay. And you should probably keep that out of the public record, because I noticed it has your social security numbers on it.
I just thought, yeah, I was thinking about that after I posted it, but so we'll pull that out. Thanks, Darren.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that takes us to agenda item 4. Mr. Davenport with a recap of 2021.
So Chris, I was going to say Chris is going to kick it off with a new leak dashboard that Caden put together. He spent a lot of time on it. He went through 10 years worth of binders that I had on my desk. So he spent a lot of time putting this together.
Cool.
So just an overview. This is something that Caden was working on in December. Like Brian said, taking all these old paper records and trying to digitize them into something that we can, you know, make better sense of, rather than just having 3-ring binders sitting around with logs of all this stuff. So he basically broke the leak types down, as you can see on the left side of the screen, as in 3 different types. There's mainline leaks, there's lateral leaks, and valve leaks. Those were kind of 3 categories that Brian's guys would mark stuff into. So what you're looking at in the map portion is the district area with all the leaks for all the years shown. And it's a pretty simple tool to use. You can simply pick a particular year that you want to view, and the map will change to the data from that particular year. And you can add and remove years and so forth. The color coding on the map matches the overall numbers on the left, So you can see by year what their what the total amount was. Down on the bottom, you can see it by month over the course of the periods. They don't quite line up. It's sort of a programming issue. But as far as the months, you can see, you know, the winter months, the summer months, and what the majority of those leak periods were. Bottom right corner is just another graph that you can see, and you can, it's clickable, so you can see all the lateral leaks, or you can see all the mainline leaks, or all the valve leaks. Kind of interesting where you see the clustering of mainline leaks is obviously going to be in the Summit Park area. And then, interestingly, the lateral leaks are, there's a fair amount in Summit Park, but there's also a fair amount in the Silver Springs area. Would be, you know, another interesting data point that we can pull from this that, you know, we sort of knew in-house, but it's really nice to be able to see it all on the map. Do you guys have any questions about this?
Are we getting worse over the years because of age and because of equipment age?
I'll let Brian answer that one.
So it kind of depends on the area. You know, we've spent a lot of money in Summit Park over the last, you know, 8 years or so improving the system. And I think if you look back on some of the data, it's obvious that the improvements are improving the mainline break status. Conversely, you know, Silver Springs, the lateral leak stuff is increasing just because of the age. So, yeah, it kind of shows that where we're spending money on improvements, it's definitely helping. But still, there's still a lot left to go in Summit Park.
So do pressure-reducing valves go into the valve leak category, or do you just not get them there?
No, we don't track those. Those are usually, you know, minor fitting kind of things inside the vaults.
The other thing on a water loss basis, we're not sensitive enough at this point to know how much this equates to water loss, are we? As opposed to just, we can say that this is a lateral leak or this is a main leak, but with regards to the volume of water that we're losing, you know, you have an overall system amount where I think you, didn't you have like 9% or something, or overall loss or something?
Yeah, actually, Tim, we can quantify almost fairly accurately after the fact as to what that the volume of a particular leak was at the time that we fix it because of our demand data that we have in SCADA. You know, for an example, late last year, or I guess technically that was actually in January or so of 2021, we found a fairly large leak in Silver Springs at the Blue Roof Market, and we could quantify once the leak was fixed that it was about 70 gallons a minute that we were losing through that leak.
Okay. Well, I guess it's sort of
pretty good information.
Yeah, it just kind of looks back at what happened. I'm not sure, other than that, what we use it for.
It's going to predict that my house is going to have a lateral leak in Silver Springs in the future. It's more likely to have a lateral leak than if I live somewhere else.
Okay, so then...
Yeah, we're going to put the predictions in. But I think this program, I think we can add a lot more to it in, you know, moving forward. You know, we can probably add that water loss component to it, and I think there's a lot more that's going to happen with this dashboard.
Let me ask a general question. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. Maybe Dave Thomas knows more than I do. But if we go to a moratorium on building, do we have any plans in place, or are we thinking about plans to make improvements in, I'll just say, main leaks, lateral leaks, or valve leaks, or anything else that might come under that umbrella?
You know, Joel, generally, you know, Brian's crew hops on any leaks that we're aware of in short order. So, you know, there's not, we don't have any sort of outstanding leak projects that we're, you know, sort of waiting to jump on when we've got the capacity to do so. So generally, I think that answer is no. You know, we have talked about attacking the water services on a wider scale in the Silver Springs neighborhood in the future, but nothing is currently scheduled aside from, you know, some new services and meter pits when the opportunity presents itself.
Let me ask a follow-up question maybe a little differently. Do we have plans in place in any way, shape, or form if we go to a moratorium?
With respect to repair projects, you know, like that the moratorium would create bandwidth for staff to address, you know, an outstanding issue.
Yes. No. So really there's two things. If we go to a moratorium, what do we plan to do with this downtime? No, there's no such thing as downtime.
Right, we have a capital facility plan.
So I think if downtime was realized, Joel, and we had moved through the capital project list for the given year that was budgeted per the capital budget, then we could perform additional projects that are in our impact fee facilities plan that were scheduled for future years.
Okay. I should have more information next week about the moratorium, if we're going to have one and how it might impact, I'll just say everyone.
That'd be great, Joel.
Chris or Brian, and just taking a look at the information and pulling it together in just this raw form, is there anything that you saw in this that surprised you?
No, not really. I kind of had all that information in my head, but it is really, really cool to see it on this sort of a chart, you know. You take everything that I have in a binder and you throw it in there, and it's just like, wow. But, you know, we kind of always knew that Summit Park was the main break capital, and Silver Springs is getting to be the service line issue area. So
good.
That just kind of confirms what we kind of always thought, you know.
But it certainly helps communicate that, right? I mean,
definitely.
I mean, it could probably take you, Brian, like hours to explain all your history with each of these individual projects and backing that up if someone was to challenge you. Whereas if that ever did happen now, you just open the program and be like, look at the screen, guys.
Yeah, I have a plan to populate it even more, but this is, you know, roughly 10 years worth of data, so it'll be interesting to put even more in.
And I think if you're trying to justify costs and system-wide repairs, right, so some of these Summit Park projects and so forth, you can see, you know, now there's a map that's showing you with data where all these leaks are and somewhat defendable of why we spend so much money in Summit Park trying to reduce some of the mainline leaks in there by, you know, going with the county and the sewer district in combining the projects to replace main lines in there. Or if, you know, replacing laterals in Silver Springs becomes a higher priority, if we have the funds and the timing for it, this is a validation for why it's Silver Springs versus, somewhere else, Willow Creek or whatever, you know, another neighborhood. I do think this data is better than just taking a look back. It actually is a maintenance record and gives us trends on where we're going to end up spending money in the future.
This is just an opportunity for you for big data, AI, and predictive analysis.
Yes. Yes, on that presentation of the leak repair dashboard.
I'm sorry, Mike, what was the start of the question?
Was there anything else there on the presentation of the dashboard?
Nope, that was it.
We're ready for the maintenance summary.
from.
Okay, so for the past year, we ended up with about 18 leaks in our system. Just under half of those main line breaks were in Summit Park, and just kind of confirms the dashboard. You know, we had a lot of laterals in Silver Springs. But if you kind of look back on the trending, it looks like, you know, a lot of the mainline breaks are coming down. I don't want to say that too loud, but like I say, the improvements show that it's helping that world. So moving on to the stuff that happened this last year, in our distribution department, we roughly have about 1,400 total fire hydrants that we have to service and maintain, and we try to hit a goal of hitting a third of those in a three-year period. We hit 42% of those last year, 591 hydrants. And that includes we have a couple hundred private hydrants that we have to maintain every year. So we've exceeded our goal in the fire hydrant maintenance world. In the PRV vaults, we have 127 stations, which amounts to about 262 valves that we have to maintain. We have a five-year goal to try to hit all those within 5 years, and this last year we hit 52 valves at about 25%, so we're a little above our goal there. Some of the milestones in distribution is the crew helped install the Silver Springs chlorination system. The distribution guys, the crew did all the underground work for all that, and so that was a lot of time spent there. The crew replaced all the PRVs in Timberline. There's four stations in that subdivision. They worked pretty heavily on water loss, which shows in our numbers, so that was really good. They've done a lot of work in that area. The crew's helped with the Silver Springs and all the Gulch Well community water well upgrades. And then we did an improvement at our Spine Road station, where that's how we bring all the water down from our plant. We installed a redundant line inside of that station in case something happens. We have another way to get the water off the hill. In the treatment plant, this was Brant Judd's first year as our treatment plant manager. So he took the task of coming up with ways and spreadsheets on better ways to track maintenance and little projects at the plant. He created new daily check sheets. He had the task of installing a whole bunch of new turbidity meters because of the state reporting stuff that's going on right now. So he installed a bunch on the carbon lines. He installed new pH lines and turbidity meters on the incoming line. And as a consequence, the maintenance cycle on that is they're calibrated monthly. We have to do that for the state standards. We pig our Lost Canyon line once a year. Last year, we did some improvements on it. When we pigged the line previously, the water overflowed the vault and actually created kind of a flood. So we shored up the containment area and made the overflow weir a little bit larger so we don't have that problem in the future. We added additional tank shark line for the chlorine dosing to the tank so we can have a redundant line in case we have a problem with the line clogging with some calcium buildup. And so we just installed another one so we can have an immediate way to keep dosing, and we'll take the other one out of service and replace it. He remodeled the office, made a bunch of office improvements. That took a lot of time, but, you know, new desks and painted the place, and so that's a nice improvement. He took the task on of replumbing the air dryer per the manufacturer's recommendations. Apparently that was plumbed wrong for a few years, so we fixed that problem. He stained the exterior of the plant. You saw pictures of that a few months ago. That's the first time that's ever been done, so that's quite nice. He put a new tank hatch over our tank that's outside of the plant. It previously had some rocks and dirt around it, and so we just enclosed the tank hatch. He installed two new membrane skid pumps on two out of the four skids, and then he's diligently working with Jacobs and all the plant improvements. The crew up there is spending a lot of time with that. In the transmission department, you know, their task is taking care of all the booster pump stations. They completely rebuilt one pump in the Summit Booster Station in Promontory. They took care of the pigging of the Lost Canyon line. We typically do that about the 1st of May every year. We fired up the Lost Canyon shallow well field, and so we ended up replacing both pumps in that well field and the panels and the SCADA stuff that's involved with that. We had a lot of issues when we had the fire in Summit Park, so we had a lot of maintenance to do on the Crestview pump station up there. In the Middle Valley pump station in Promontory, there was a meter issue that was not logging the flows correctly, so we had to re-plumb the piping in that location. That turned out really nice. At the Preserve pump station, we had to redo the piping there to accommodate a new style of meter. Consequently, we had to replace a nice isolation valve outside of that facility in order to do that. We did some improvements in the Bear Hollow pump station in the Sun Peak area. Currently replacing some check valves. We are not quite done with that, but we've been doing that. The crew are constantly replacing, not replacing, but maintaining all the pump control valves. He's getting on a cycle to where he's kind of doing what Ryan's doing in the distribution, to where he's going to be completely rebuilding them every 5 years. We've been involved with upgrading new capacitors in a lot of our facilities. We did that at the Signal Hill pump station in Promontory. They're basically just end of life. So we've got a plan to move forward with all the pump stations, replacing those. We've replaced some check valves in the Lost Canyon on pumps 3 and 4. That's a big project, kind of an ongoing thing, so I will be doing more of those this year. Also, replacing some mechanical seals is an ongoing issue, and we did that at one of the pumps in Lost Canyon. Totally rebuilt pump 3 and pump 5 at Lost Canyon. That's more of a maintenance wear and tear kind of thing. We budget to try to do two of those every year. Installed a new jockey pump for some efficiency at the Silver Springs pump station. And out of our for our booster sites, we have 20 sites, which we have 73 booster pumps and motors. They are greased annually, well, per manufacturer's recommendation, so it's greased monthly, quarterly, or as needed, and the oil is changed yearly. That's pretty much it. So if you guys have any questions.
That's amazing, Brian. That's a huge amount of work. So thanks to you and the crews and everybody at Mountain Regional. That's just a lot. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, when you put it on paper, it just kind of add up, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Oh, and you got to check out our new forklift / lift that we got at the plant. That's a well-needed piece of equipment, so we're excited to have that.
Thanks a bunch, Brian.
You bet.
Okay, on to item 5. And Sam Grenley in the kind of a preview of the 22 capital projects.
Okay, I can share my screen here. And can everybody see the memo pop up here?
Yep, good job.
Okay. Before we get started, just touching back on Brian. Brian can be pretty understated with that operations list, but it's really an incredible amount of work Brian and his team get through on an annual basis. So I appreciate you, Brian, and everything you guys do. So that's awesome.
Oh, thanks, Sam.
Yep. Okay. So 2022 projects. We have two or potentially one, depending on how one project falls, tier one projects, as we're currently defining them, being 5% of the district annual operating budget or greater. But our main focus, and coming in at a potential cost of $1.3 million, is a Summit Park Tank 1 replacement. And this tank is needed for the main zone in Summit Park, which includes the new Discovery subdivision. And the tank that's currently there, I have a photo in the packet, is undersized for our needs And since Summit Park is a stacked tank system, it is really critical to the entire Summit Park system. And also, I apologize. I'm at home. There's a fair bit of background noise, so hope you guys cut me a little bit of slack here.
You're good. We can't hear anything other than you. It's great.
Okay, good. That's terrific. So we're tearing down this existing about 100,000 gallon steel tank. That's a welded steel tank. And we're going to maximize the lot space we have, maintain the existing hydraulics, and put in a new concrete storage tank. And on top of that, we're going to include a new chlorination system within the storage tank, kind of in the same vein of what we did over in the Silver Springs area at our spring tank in the past year. We're really happy with how the chlorination system worked, and we think it's an improvement over what we're currently doing, and it'll make a big impact on the chlorine residuals and water quality throughout Summit Park. So that's really our big focus for this year. We have Aqua doing the design. They've successfully done other tanks in the district for us, including the Silver Creek tank and pump station project, which is a complicated design. And we're hoping to bring this to the board during the April board meeting. It's an aggressive design window, but Aqua thinks they can meet that so far, and that's what we're planning on. If it slips, I don't think that's the end of the world, but that's our goal. That's the design window, and more to come on the Summit Park Tank 1 replacement.
What do we do with any of this stuff that we get rid of? You said that we're getting rid of some of these storage tanks, for example, but are we just destroying them, or are we reusing them, or are we selling them, are we getting money for the metal, or can you comment on that?
That's a really good question, Joel. So the existing steel storage tank will be included in the construction contract, and I guess presumably the contractor would recycle or reuse the steel, and that would be baked into the bids for the construction project for the district.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. And then the second aerial figure, it's kind of a lot to digest. It's just the Summit Park neighborhood, but it kind of shows the storage tank down here at the bottom of Summit Park, and I think it kind of gives context of how much vertical relief we have within Summit Park, and how critical the lower Summit Park Tank 1 is to the stacked water system in the area.
Hey Sam.
Yeah.
This is Brian. I got a quick note on that also. You know, besides the tank being severely undersized, this is our oldest tank in our water system. It was built in the early 1960s, so it's also nearing its end of life.
Yeah, absolutely. And the tank being undersized is certainly not a criticism on the district. It's just kind of it's a natural progression of things that have happened with Discovery, Timberline, and the growth within Summit Park, and really how it served also, like utilizing the greater district infrastructure and all our water resources displayed Summit Park. The second project is our every other year effort up in Summit Park as replacing critical water lines. And that's generally the Woodland Loop within Summit Park. This has been an identified area of needed improvement, not only due to historical leaks in the area, but also for the ability for the district to isolate certain neighborhoods moving forward in the event of a leak or any other service we need to do. So we're looking forward to this project. I think it'll add a lot to the district. It'll increase the level of service in the neighborhood. And you know, allow us to make repairs, changes, other things we need to do on an operational basis without putting a ton of homes out of service. So the budget figure here, we just penciled in not to exceed $600,000, which is a big number. However, we have not fully defined the extent and the scope of work of the project yet, and we're working with Snyderville Basin on that to share costs, geotechnical costs, survey costs, and general planning costs. So we're looking forward to this project. It's a continuation of years past projects that have involved Snyderville Basin and the county. And I think it'll be another successful, I hope it's another successful waterline project in some part.
Okay. Sam, is it just Woodland Drive, or is it Woodland Drive and Woodland Place, or is it just that line from Timberline up to Parkview? Like, what's the total extent?
Well, you're testing my knowledge of Summit Park roadways here. You know, I think
I can answer that.
You can do better than I can.
So the project is all of Woodland, starting at the intersection of Lower Evergreen, and yes, also Woodland Place. I think we're going to try to bid it as alternate B. We don't know if we'll be able to afford to go all the way around the whole loop. So we're splitting it up as the south side of Woodland and Woodland Place is one project, and then the north side, which affects you, as the alternate.
Yeah, that south side has been a nightmare. You guys have been over there a couple times a winter, typically. So, yep.
Yeah, and, you know, developing that area, when we have to shut the water off, it's such a big kill. So installing all these valves is going to be a huge improvement.
But you're not thinking of doing that stretch up to Parkview? So it's just from Lower Evergreen down?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Sam.
Yes, no problem. That might end up being a Tier 2 project, as Brian alluded to. I think we can structure the bid schedule in an intelligent way that kind of gives us the option to execute a larger project or a smaller project based on our budget. It's been challenging to really estimate construction costs the last year or so and moving forward as well. So we're trying to be smart about how we approach the bid schedule on this project. Moving into Tier 3 projects, and again, these are Mountain Regional managed projects, but still something we want to track from a budgeting perspective, obviously. The Kilby Booster pump station upgrade, we've previously talked about, but we want to finish that up this year. That's not only a structural upgrade, but also a total electrical controls upgrade by bringing all the equipment above grade or to ground level and out of a vault. And that's not only operationally a positive thing, but it really truly is a safety, in my mind, a safety improvement for district operations. So I think it's an important thing to do. Spine booster pump station is along the same lines. It's structural, again, to accommodate the electrical improvements, but really it's mostly an electrical and controls upgrade. The main difference with the spine booster pump station upgrade would be we are expanding the footprint of the existing building that is there, but only to encompass the existing, the previous pump station vault that was on site. So structurally, it's not a big lift to get a little bit more floor space and to accommodate all the new electrical and control panels. So that's reflective in the larger price tag there. The third project is looking at our Silver Springs booster pump station. In Silver Springs, we have a number of groundwater sources, but we cannot utilize those groundwater sources throughout the district because Silver Springs, in general, is a lower elevation than the Atkinson zone or other zones in the district. So we're taking a look at that. We think we can do a simple retrofit to the booster pump station that will provide a lot of resiliency and redundancy in the district moving forward with our groundwater resources. Number four is the picking project. I think moving forward, this will just kind of roll into the, you know, operations project menu and in the booster pump station folks' purview. But for one more year, we're going to track the Lost Canyon picking project. We've had a lot of success in years past. And the fifth item, which we hope to accomplish, which is a last minute addition, is to take a look at the air brick tank, which is kind of a unique piece of infrastructure up near the top of the colony that has also taken a lot of staff resources over the year. And while the design, I think, was a good design in the past, I think we can improve the reliability up at, in a remote part of the district, and we hope to tackle that this fall, but that's kind of the lowest on the priority list of this year's capital projects. So that's kind of a brief overview. And the last piece is we just kind of I tried to express this in a single page, a ledger page, 11 by 17. Looking at how things are spread throughout the year, the green bars are kind of our schedule. And again, it's kind of a challenge to show everything on a single piece of paper, but this is our best shake at showing what we're hoping to accomplish over the year, when it's happening, and general project budget amounts. This last piece, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, good. Appreciate that, Mike. The last piece I'm not going to cover is these design and engineering studies, but I did want to highlight our Signal Hill 10% design. That's a $200,000 to $300,000 effort, and obviously a big lift on the district's part. That's not a capital project per se, but it certainly is a capital project level effort, a huge effort on the part of plant operations. So we'll be giving updates on that, I'm sure, but that's another capital project level effort that we're going to hope to accomplish this year is get to our conceptual or 10% design of our water treatment plant expansion. So that's all I had to share for 2022.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah. It's a lot of great stuff.
Yeah. Thanks, Sam.
Well played.
Yeah, thank you, Sam. Really appreciate your focus on safety and forward thinking on those vaults, which do not have good statistics overall. So, yeah, well done. Good choice.
Okay, so item six here is consideration of annexation of a parcel. Chris, you want to take us through that, please?
All right. So this particular annexation is a small piece that sits behind the back of the Discovery project. It was a cabin parcel. There was an existing structure on the parcel that was that kept this out of the rest of the Discovery project. The developer and the landowner worked on an agreement to provide them service, and now we need to annex this parcel into the district. It's pretty straightforward, again, just like the other ones. Nothing, odd about this. It's got the one unit that's already on it that we would be providing with a single, single residential service to. There's not a lot of development for this one.
Chris, would you mind flashing the memo up just so we can see the exhibit?
Can you guys not see my screen?
We see the agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There we go.
Yeah, sorry about that. Too many windows open. Oh, yeah, So here's the Discovery project, and here's the parcel behind it, and you can see here on the west end is where that cabin exists currently. This cabin's been there for years within the family trust that owned all the Discovery parcels before.
So this is another one of these cleanup efforts, similar to the one in Summit Park that we had at the last board meeting. So no concerns, no concerns from the staff on this one.
Right. How were they getting water previously to the cabin?
They had a well.
Are they retaining those rights, or do we acquire those?
We did not acquire those. I'm not sure if that was if they keep them or if it's a part of the agreement with the developer. I'm not sure what was worked out there.
Can we check on that?
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
We have some leverage here to potentially request that, I would think.
We can look into it, Ian.
Any other question?
Okay, I think it sounds like we're ready for a motion for recommendation.
But if we recommend, where does that leave a potential water right with the well?
Yeah, I mean, if you want us to reach out to this property owner and find out about that, obviously that leverage is gone if the board recommends that we annex, if the board recommends the county council annex this property into the district. I'm a little... I understand your point, Ian, but I guess my concern is that this property owner had some kind of deal with the developer, right, to provide a service line to the infrastructure for Mountain Regional to serve it. They're coming to us asking. They've come to us and they've paid an impact fee,
yeah,
for us to serve their property. I think for us at this point to go back. In a lot of ways, we missed the fact that this property wasn't annexed into the district to begin with because of this, strange and unique case. And the fact that they've paid impact fees already, I think for us to go back and say, hey, in order to annex, we want to talk to you about the water rights. I'm not comfortable with that position. I don't mind going back and asking them like what the story is, and I don't know if anybody else has comments, but I think that's the district's not in a great position to do that.
Yeah, I think of the impact fee, and I'm assuming it's not a bunch of water. It's maybe a half an acre foot or something that was all that they would have been able to prove up on using here, maybe.
I guess my concern is that, we're so thin on water rights and so reliant on, Weber Basin. I'd say any right we can get our hand on, we should take advantage of. And, if that right was there, I guess my question would be, where is it going to go? And who's going to use that? So, if it's going to stay in the basin somewhere, I think Mountain Regional should own it. That would be my position.
And then not take the impact fee.
I think that the impact fee that we have, I think there are like two or three components of it, and one of them is the water right component. So the fact that we've already taken the impact fee and we've accepted it, we might be pretty much too late.
I guess another approach, Dave, is we could refund that portion, depending upon the volume of this water,
yeah.
Right? We could say, okay, if it's a half an acre foot, that's equivalent, that's the equal portion that would be included in our one ERC impact fee. So, we could refund that $2,000 or whatever it is to this for payment essentially for that water right to get the additional paper, which is what Ian's after.
No, you could.
right? But you'd go through the state engineer's process. Would you have to do
It'd just be like any other water deed. I mean, we'd have to do our due diligence. They could tell us what water rights they had, and then we would need to do some due diligence to make sure it's a valid water right. And then they would simply convey it to Mountain Regional as part of this process. And then we would refund, what the equivalent amount of the impact fee would be.
Would we have to advertise? I mean, we're not changing really the point of...
No, you're not changing the point of diversion. You're just, at this point, you're just getting the water right.
Yeah. Seems like a lot of work for a half an acre foot.
Well,
they're going to sell it to somebody, though. I mean, that right's going to go somewhere, right? And if it's going to go somewhere in the basin, I guess my opinion is it should go to Mountain Regional.
So
not to another entity that is potentially needing of water, and that would any little drop would help their system.
Yeah, I think it's a valid point. I think it's something that we can follow up on. Can we separate that as a task outside of the annexation situation, right? Where I don't have any issues with having this property owner annex in and having a conversation with him and asking him, what water rights do they have for the groundwater source that they have? Are they willing to part with that? And we could compensate them for that with a refund with that portion of their impact fee. I think that we could accomplish both of those things.
But we don't have any leverage negotiating on that, so we've already missed the opportunity.
I mean, obviously you could go back and talk about what the water right is that they may have. And then, basically use your leverage now and say, we'd like to take the water right instead of this portion of the impact fee.
I think the issue is, again, is a process misstep on the district's part because of... we didn't double check to make sure this property was annexed into the district, quite simply. As a result, this property owner paid an impact fee to come into the district. When we take receipt of that impact fee, my understanding is that we're obligating, the district is obligating itself to serve this property. So if that is true, and Dave, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if that is true, then, I don't see us we don't have leverage with respect to the annexation process. I mean,
but they're not annexed in yet. We're voting on that right now, I thought.
That's correct. So legally, I don't know where we stand on that.
I mean, legally, we probably shouldn't have taken the impact fee before they were annexed into the district.
But, yeah, I understand that part.
But as a result, they haven't been annexed in yet. There's still an opportunity. I mean, it's a matter of policy, whether the board wants to not do the recommendation on annexation in this meeting to allow further discussion with the property owner.
And I fully want to annex this property. I mean, I fully support annexing it. I hate to see a missed opportunity since we're so lean on paper.
What are the odds that they don't have the rights on this and they've already sold it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'd have to investigate. So I think, we could table.
I mean, I wouldn't go in and demand it from them as a leverage if they don't actually own it. We should know that before we go in and start trying to make that part of the calculus.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think we need to do some research on that. Ian, I think it's a good point. We'll just follow Dave's recommendation. Let's just table this for this meeting. We'll look into it. I can reach out to the property owner. and have that conversation with them. But you know, the last point on the paper rights I'll say is, we're flush with East Canyon paper rights, and we'll never use all of our East Canyon rights. So.
Yeah, and I guess it's not, maybe not lean, but more to my point of, I'd rather this not go to another entity that, that is looking for water.
Yeah, understood.
And you know, if they've already done something with it and it's already gone, no big deal. But I'd just like to at least take advantage of the opportunity if we can.
Yeah, and I think it's a cleanup effort. It's cleanup, whether it's this month or next month. I don't think it impacts our process.
The property owner isn't in a hurry.
No, I believe it's a cabin. It's a, you know, not a full time residence. Property owner's out of the country. You know, to this point, we've withheld installing the meter to this property. Again, they had an alternative water source, so I think we're in a position to be able to further the conversation with them.
So what does this...
You need somebody to make a motion to table the item.
I'll make it since I, yeah, kind of... charged in.
I'll second.
Karen? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 I think that was unanimous. Okay, we've tabled that one. And then we're on to item 7. And getting ready to kick off a engineering evaluation of the Pine Meadows Water Company. Scott, you want to take us through that one?
I will. And, you know, before we get into the engineering evaluation, I want to take a step back and have a broader discussion on Pine Meadows. So discussion begins, you know, about a year ago we had a conversation with in one of our leadership meetings with Summit County Council Chair and Vice Chair, Board Chair and Vice Chair, myself. And the discussion at the time was focused around the condition that had become a reality that Pine Meadows was short source capacity to meet their peak day demands. That situation was realized in the summer of 2020, and so again, early 2021, I presented the situation to our leadership on the council and looked for some direction from them that we could either continue with an agreement that we had with Pine Meadows, a memorandum of understanding, which allowed for us to provide water on essentially a wholesale basis. In the event that they did not have enough source to meet their needs. Alternatively, the other approach would be to move forward with an annexation process. The outcome of that meeting, the direction that we received from our council leadership was that they recommended that we pursue with the annexation process, that They were not in favor of having deficient water systems continuing to exist in the basin. That's what Mountain Regional was formed to do. And you know, quite simply, maybe I shouldn't use the basin. They did not want, you know, they wanted to limit the number of deficient water systems in Summit County. And if Mountain Regional had, you know, was in a position to annex them, that we should move forward with that process. So that's the direction that we took. That's the direction we've gone over the past 12 months or so. We've worked through the annexation administrative fee agreement with Pine Meadows. And the next step now is our engineering evaluation. And engineering evaluation, the purpose of that is to identify the deficiencies of the system, to put cost estimates on those deficiencies, which would then become a component of an assessment that was charged to Pine Meadow residents once they annexed into the district. We've learned a lot over the last 12 months, and some concerns have come to light that have generated some, really constructive discussions internally amongst the staff. I want to share those concerns with all of you, some of which you've heard. One item is has to do with the administrative policy framework that will be necessary for us to be able to annex and manage this new service area. Currently, Pine Meadows does not allow their residents to water outside. Non-regional obviously does, right? And we expect that if Pine Meadows were to annex, we would continue with, their rule that that portion of our system would not be able to water outside. And the reason is twofold. One is we don't, it's yet to be evaluated by Bowen and Collins, our engineering service provider, but we expect to learn that our North Ridge water system does not have the capacity needed to be able to support, that volume of water that would be necessary for outdoor watering. The second piece that came out of our meeting with council this week was, it's a good thing that I'm getting a bit of background noise. If you've got some background there, if you can mute yourself, that'd be great. The second thing is that it's a good thing that they're not allowed to water outside. That's really a direction we want to go with respect to limiting the use of water outside, and we don't want to walk back on something that we could see as a progressive step. So, anyway, losing my train of thought here. Just bear with me for just a second. So, administrative policy framework, right? Separate rules and regulations. If they're not allowed to water outside, it would mean that they would have a different impact fee than our general service area, the district, because the capacity needed on a per unit or per residence basis would be lower. Okay, so now we have potentially a separate rules and regulations, a separate impact fee structure. There's a possibility for a separate rate structure. That would be a future district decision whether or not rate structure should be the same in an area that has a significant difference in rules with respect to outdoor watering. And my concern that I raised with our council leadership this week when we met with them was I'm worried about precedents here where we annex Pine Meadows into the district, we have this entirely different administrative policy framework. What happens with the next system and the next system and the next system? Do we find ourselves in a position where, we've got five sets of rules and regulations and, five different impact fees, and anytime we want to make a policy change, those policy changes have to come before the board and before the county council. It's an administrative load, not only internally but externally as well. The second issue has to do with the challenges with respect to operating this system, and this is something I've raised with the board, I think, a couple months ago. This is a remote system. It's a large system, and it will be very difficult to operate. As they are today, they have operators that that are stationed there in the neighborhood. They historically have had two operators that are on site to address the needs of this system. In speaking with Brian, for us to be able to manage the operations of this system in the future, we can certainly do it, but it will require dedicated equipment that remains up there, response times. You can imagine response times are going to be slower than many of the other areas in our district. And generally, I'll just say that the repairs and maintenance up there will be very time intensive and very manpower intensive. So I raised those concerns with the county council this week. and said, you know, we're absolutely willing and able to continue forward on the annexation, but recognize if we do so, you know, we may be setting ourselves up, you know, for, you know, future challenges with respect to these administrative policies and such. And the feedback I got from the council was that they recommended we perform a pros and cons analysis on this annexation, and that generally, and I'll look to Karen and Mike and to Lisa, generally they were supportive of us reconsidering a wholesale type water sales arrangement. And I think one of the reasons that they felt better about that was that, as Councilmember Robinson learned, you know, this is a well-operated system, right? There are operators that are well-trained on-site. It's a well-run system. It's not something that's just falling apart. The infrastructure is fairly new in the context of service life of water infrastructure. And so the door kind of reopened on this concept of a wholesale water sales arrangement. Internally, we walked through a pros and cons analysis this morning. I'm not going to go through all the details. I'm just going to generally say, you know, on the pro side, it's largely focused on revenue. And the reason that revenue is a pro, you know, we're not in the business of making money. What it does is it leads to rate stabilization for our customers, right? So if we can realize additional revenue for the district, that staves off, you know, a potential future rate increase to some extent. The reality is based on Steve's modeling, we're talking about a couple hundred thousand dollars of revenue realized after all expenses are paid. And in, you know, 2021, our total revenue is over $17 million. So this is not something that's going to move the needle very far. It may save a couple percent, couple percentage points in a future rate increase. But again, not a significant, you know, financial benefit to the district.
Scott?
Yeah.
When you're talking about a pro and con analysis, I just, man, this is probably in the dumb question category. Pro and con for who? For the residents, for the county, for the council,
for the district,
or for the district.
Yeah.
But what's the answer to that? Is it because when you do a pro and a con, it's got to be from a perspective, and I'm not clear on the perspective that the county council was asking you to do a pro and con analysis. It's probably easy to figure out, but there's politics. There's, you know, the rest of the, you know, Mountain Regional Water customers, Mountain Regional Water operations. Mm-hmm. But what was their perspective when they asked for the pro and con analysis?
Yeah, I mean, my interpretation was from a business standpoint of Mountain Regional, you know, so a pro being, you know, a financial benefit, you know, which again means a benefit to our ratepayers in the form of rate stabilization. The cons would be the items that I stepped through already, needing specific administrative policies, the operational challenges that would come along with it, et cetera. You know, and a couple other ones that came up this morning, you know, is that we're currently experiencing extreme levels of growth in the district. And the feeling amongst the staff is that we should be focusing our energy and our efforts on our current service area before we, you know, go through what is an extremely time-intensive process of annexation, right? That the lift of just the annexation process in and of itself is huge for the district. So, you know, generally, again, to reiterate, focus should be applied on the current service needs of the district. In the grand scheme of things, this is a high impact for, you know, high impact to the district, low benefit to the district situation. And that's kind of where we're at. I mean, you know, the recommendation from the staff this morning was that we should take a pause. We should take a step back. We should communicate with the Pine Meadows organization and let them know that possibly in the future, but you know, at this time we'd like to take a step back from this process. So, you know, obviously the reason I bring all this up is we don't want to execute an engineering evaluation scope of services contract if we're not going to go any further, because this is really the point at which we will start to spend money, which is fronted by the district and reimbursed by Pine Meadows per our annexation administrative fee agreement. To Tim's point, you know, we don't know what the reaction will be from Pine Meadows. I can, you know, suspect that for the last year we've been talking about annexation with them. They've lost a key operator. You know, on some end, there may be some frustration. You know, you could also sort of extrapolate that I'm sure that they like the idea of us annexing them in kind of moving forward.
Well, our last major annexation was Community Water, and on a scale of 10 being total misery and 0 being, it was pretty smooth running. It's probably below 5, right?
Community Water?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not all annexations are created equal, right?
Yeah. I think this annexation from a process standpoint will be a lot easier because we have a good working relationship with the Pine Meadows staff. You know, but it's after the annexation is complete, administrative and operationally, it'll be much more challenging. So
I'm just curious where that's headed. I know the council's asked you to do that, so we're going to do that. But is the answer possibly we're not going to do it?
Yeah, and that's a possible answer. I think that's the recommendation from the staff at this point. You know, the council wasn't. I don't think the council was clear. And Karen or Mike or Lisa, chime in here if you disagree, but I don't think the council was clear on exactly what the next steps and exactly what the process is from here. You know, I kind of interpreted it was the district should take a look at the pros and cons and, you know, evaluate whether or not they want to move forward. But the council seemed to be receptive to continuing in a wholesale water sales contract type arrangement.
Okay.
Karen, you're muted.
I would agree with that, you know, that they seem to be open to continuing the wholesale water agreement instead of doing a full-on annexation.
Pause is what I heard from Liz. You know, and we also talked about, you know, the Scott's departure and how does that fit in you know, all the timing and having the person that's going to be responsible for it. We really might not have, you know, anybody in place for a bit.
Yeah, it kind of gets back to that capacity challenge as well. And I had a note to mention that, Mike, and I failed to, so thanks.
Scott, then remind me, if we do go ahead with the wholesale arrangement, one of the reasons Pine Meadows didn't like that or didn't see that as a best-case long-term option for them is if we run into, say, a water shortage issue within the district, they're the first to get cut.
Yeah, per our rules and regulations, that's correct. So there's some nuances here that you know, that they may want to work with us on refreshing a contract, The one that's in place right now is an old MOU that the situation was different at that time.
Yeah, and there's obviously opportunity to renegotiate that and get a better arrangement. But in the short term, they're at risk. So
correct.
Check.
Does this require at this point, or
what's that, Karen?
Okay. Does this require some kind of motion at this point?
No, it's just I just want to get a a feeling from the board of just a pulse of the board. You know, I'm not hearing any objections to what I just said, so I'm taking that pulse as next step is for me to reach out to leadership at Pine Meadows and have a conversation.
Do we need a motion?
$72,000 more than your authorization, Scott.
Yeah, anything over $50,000 is more than my authorization. So if I think
you would be coming to say asking for the board to approve this, it sounds like you're going to pull this off.
Yep. So this would be another. We'll need a motion to table this one as well.
Motion to table the Pine Meadows contract component accounts.
Second.
With Karen, thank you. Both, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Two, okay. Karen, Ian, Tim.
Tim, you're muted.
Joel's muted, too.
I.
Thank you.
Okay, that takes us through item 7 to 8, some general manager comments.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I think in the essence of time, I'm going to just mention to the board that the district's 2022 goals and key activities are provided in the packet. I put together a list of activities in a similar form that I did in 2021, identifying kind of the focus points for each department and those focus points that the board can expect to see in board meetings that need board approval or will be presented to the board. So I'll ask all board members to please take just a couple minutes at your convenience if you haven't done so already, and please please review those. I think it helps. It helps to kind of understand what the roadmap is for the year, and recognizing with my transition, some of these things may move. But again, I think it's nice to have these in the back of your head.
Hey Scott, the blue items that were in there,
yep,
said they were provided in the board packet. Were they in this packet and I missed them?
No, just that you can expect to see them in 2022 in your board packets.
In board packets at some point. Yeah, okay.
That's correct. So with that takes us through agenda item 8A, 8B. I don't have anything else at this time, Mike.
Okay. Well, then I think we're then we can go on to you, Mr. Thomas, with any legal updates.
Nothing from me.
Okay. So now I think, are we ready for a motion to go into executive session?
Department updates first, Mike.
Yeah, sorry about that. Okay. Any questions on the department updates? Let's just go around the room. Karen, would you like to go first?
Yes. On Steve's report, you said that water consumption is up, and can we confirm that that's just because we have more customers, or do we have clients using more water? And then my second question was, what insurances renew in February?
Okay.
Steve's on mute.
Yeah.
Okay. Consumption is more a factor of growth than more usage. It's definitely usage per person, per client connection is down. The insurances that renew are the liability and the property and auto. We renewed the workers' compensation at year end, and then just at the end of February is when the other items, insurance items renew, and I've been working with our agent on those and going through our application, and he's had a couple of questions, but no big stepping stones. We'll probably have that here this month. No big hurdles, I should say.
That's all I had, except for, you know, just Brian's report was very impressive.
Hey, thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Karen.
Tim?
I have no questions.
Okay. Ian?
I had one for Anna on the ion water percentage near about 50% of the customers have it. Is that percentage been climbing? Do we think that trend is going to continue? Are we doing any outreach to kind of push the ion water stats going up? Seems like it has some advantages for us, people having that app.
Ian, she may not be able to talk. She's saying it's been pretty steady and for customer side, but I still think we're way above the normal of what Badger sees for sign-in. They were down in the teens, and we're well above that.
Yeah, I think Anna and her staff do a pretty good job. We try to communicate with the customers frequently and through bill messages, through our newsletters, on our district website. I promoted it on KPCW before. And we are above their general average. We are also able to, at least when people sign up, if we have an email address, we just automatically start sending them leak alerts. They have to go in and create their own account in Ion Water, but at least they can get leak alerts. So we'll keep monitoring that and doing as much as we can to get people to sign on, because it is a great, great tool.
Yep, I was just going to give compliments on that. So, yeah, thanks for continuing to track that and push it. That's it for me. Thanks, Anna, and everybody answered for
it. And then, Joel, any questions on the department updates?
No, nothing at this time.
Okay. Well, I'd like to, thank the staff for all that goes into this. It's a lot. Okay, and so now I think we're ready for here it is. Executive session. I think we're ready for a motion.
Mike?
Yes.
Before we go into executive session, I don't know if you're going to be coming back in, but Scott, I think you've done a wonderful job. You've been communicating with the administrative board. You're the face of the district. And best of luck to you.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate that. Thank you absolutely to the board's support, not only, you know, of me, but of the district as a whole. I think, to be honest, I think we have an amazing board. I think we're unbelievably fortunate. I think there's a lot of folks that aren't as fortunate to have a board like we do. So thank you for your time, your service, and for the relationship. It's been great. So with that, just procedurally, we're going to move into executive. All board members, myself and Lisa, will exit this meeting. So be sure to click leave and exit this meeting. We're going to go into a separate meeting, and then we will have to rejoin to publicly adjourn this public session. So just keep the Zoom. All right. Okay, Mike, I have the tape rolling again, so just a reminder, we need to state the motion to move into executive, and then also the motion to come out. And Mike, you're muted.
Okay. Do you guys hear me?
Yeah, we got
you.
Yeah. Okay. So I thought we had a motion to go into – we did have a motion to go into executive session, right?
Yeah, we did not do it in the open session. We talked about it, and then I think I started speaking when we missed it. So.
Okay. So I'm looking for a motion to move into executive session to discuss personnel issues. So is there a second? Or is it a motion?
We made the motion already in executive session. We just need to restate it here who made that motion. So I made the motion to move into executive session for personnel reasons, and it was seconded by Joel.
Okay.
And then Ian made the motion to go out of executive session, and it was seconded by Tim.
Yep. And so, and that was unanimous. And so now we're back in, do we need a motion to be in?
No, now we just need one last motion to adjourn.
Looking for that motion.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Aaron and Ian, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay.